Hello, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. How is your day today? If you're Jewish, you're in the throes of Passover. If you're a Christian, you're in the throes of Easter. What are you in the throes of if you're a Muslim tonight or a Hindu? Anything? Anybody throwing anything who are Muslim or Hindu? No? I tend to try to duck when all that throwing is going on. Although Kathy and Molly spent the better part of yesterday afternoon making colored eggs, getting ready for the Easter Bunny, of course. Only you did something new this year, didn't you? You put little holes in the eggs and blew out the...
My cheeks hurt.
You blew out the interior of the egg?
I did, because Molly wanted to play with those Easter eggs last year all the time.
Right.
And since they were real hard-boiled eggs, we didn't think it was real great that they were out of the refrigerator and getting smelly. So I thought that I'd blow them out this year.
Well, that was it was weird to see, because we wound up with like a dozen empty, intact eggshells that Molly and Kathy then had a great time coloring. But this huge bowl of yellow, viscous stuff sitting on the... on the deck here in the kitchen, and so we have about 9 quiches and a whole bunch of custard. Ugh. So just thought you might be interested in that. Maybe not. Anyway, happy all these weird celebrations to everybody. I hope you're having a great time, whatever your religious dogma dictates. Oh, or if you are a kind of more of an earth-centered individual and you're celebrating the joys of spring, have at it. I'm celebrating the joys of spring the way I usually do, and that is having a hard time breathing. But that only happened, what's the phrase, late in life. I've never had allergies in my life until the past 4 or 5 years. And if you have allergies from pollen, you know what this is like. So anyway, let's switch from the sublime, i.e., spring celebrations, to the absolute macabre. That would be Michelle Bachmann, Congresswoman from Minnesota. If you remember, not too long ago, she was calling for the media of all people or all organizations to investigate members of Congress to, in her words, find out if they are pro-America or anti-America. Michelle Bachmann really is crazy. I mean, you know, you could write off George Bush as a dry drunk, Dick Cheney as a complete psychopath, but Michelle Bachmann is crazy. That kind of crazy. And if you're a mental health worker, I'm not, you know, no offense here. I'm not trying to bust you or your clients. I have crazy in my family. Trust me. But if you understand what I mean by crazy, Michelle Bachmann, she's the kind of crazy who is almost entertaining as long as you keep her away from the sharps and don't let her vote. Now, the fact that she's in Congress puts a whole different spin on it. But Michelle Bachmann is the type who oh, I don't know, would do something like to prepare the Christmas turkey. She would put it in the microwave. That kind of crazy, kind of amusing, but nonetheless, you know, kind of dangerous too. Well, it turns out someone has taken up Michelle Bachmann's, demand to find out how many members of Congress are pro and anti-America. According to Jason Lincoln's at Huffington Post, someone is doing it. His name is Spencer Bacchus. He's a member of the House. Where's Spencer Bacchus from? I have no idea, but I don't know. Is he from Alabama? Spencer? Anyway, he's made a list. No, it's a secret list. It's all his, of the socialists in the House of Representatives. Anyway, that's what he told the Birmingham News. I guess that would make him an Alabamian. Well, not necessarily, but that's where the story wound up, at the Birmingham News. Now, who are the 17 socialists in the U.S. House of Representatives? Shh, that's the secret part. That's why it's a secret list. From The Hill newspaper's feature briefing room, this. Representative Spencer Bacus, Republican of Alabama, there you go, puts the number of socialists in the House at 17. Bacus told local government leaders on Thursday, according to the Birmingham News, quote, some of the men and women I work with in Congress are socialists. Ooh, end quote. When pressed later by a reporter, Bacus gave the specific number of 17. Now, what do you think Bacus or Michelle Bachmann are going to do when they find out, according to the latest Rasmussen poll? And isn't Rasmussen, isn't that the favorite of the right-wing crazy people? According to this poll, only 53% of American adults believe capitalism is better than socialism. The latest Rasmussen Reports National Telephone Survey found that 20% disagree that capitalism is better than socialism, and the 20% say socialism is better. 27% are not sure which is better. Now, adults under 30 are pretty much evenly divided. 37% prefer capitalism, 33% prefer socialism, and 30% are undecided. Adults over 40, of course, strongly favor capitalism. That's because adults over 40 are pretty much permanently damaged. You know, you got to figure they've been listening to right-wing drivel all of their adult lives on radio and television. So, you know, how could they have an opinion different from that which has been pumped into their addled little brains? And, of course, Republicans favor capitalism by an 11-to-1 margin. Why, of course. Of course they do. They're losing their homes, their kids' education funds, their retirement, their jobs, their factories, and their towns, but they still favor capitalism. Yes, they do. What a bunch of dumbasses. Democrats, on the other hand, are much more closely divided. 39% favor capitalism, 30% favor socialism. So there you go. Just a bunch of weird numbers for you. But somebody, through all this, Rasmussen finds that 53% of Americans believe capitalism is better than socialism. 53%. Somebody, quick, send an email to Michelle Bachmann and tell her that. From Prairie 2, Yo-Ho-Ho and a bottle of Chateau Lafite Rothschild. In tonight's report from our economics correspondent, Prairie 2 writes, the venture capitalist, if you ask a Republican, they will tell you that this is a forward-thinking individual that provides capital for risky new ventures. Ventures that hold great promise for society. For example, a compassionate conservative funding a cure for disease. Now, while sometimes venture capitalists actually do this, most new ventures in the past were things like the dot-com bubble. What they've been doing the past 8 years with current tax laws and total lack of regulation is they have become nothing less than pirates, plundering and looting across the corporate seas. They take a relatively modest investment, match it with a 10-to-1 financing, and go out and acquire controlling interest in a business. Then they sell off any marketable assets that the company holds and borrow money against what they can't sell. They spin off the remaining shell with the entire debt load, including the original loan that they are now no longer responsible for, and take the entire profit as capital gains, which are then taxed at a maximum of 15%. The Republicans keep insisting that the capital gains tax be reduced to zero to, quote, stimulate business. In the old days, when we were a prosperous nation, short-term capital gains were taxed at 66%. Now, you might think that a bank wouldn't want to loan money for this purpose, but since the debt ends up attached to a company that will almost certainly fail in the long term. Let me finish this right after the break. I've been down.
the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, interrupted right in the middle of Prairie 2's missive from Beyond the Fringe. He wrote tonight about what it's like to be a venture capitalist. And he points out, in the old days when we were a prosperous nation, short-term capital gains were taxed at 66%. But now that we are on the verge of sinking beneath the seas, the Republicans, the Limbots, are still clawing and scratching and screaming for a zero capital gains rate. Anyway, Prairie 2 writes, you might think that a bank would want to loan more money for the purpose of You might think that a bank wouldn't want to loan. Oh, Jesus, I give up. All right, here's what I'm going to do. Let me set Prairie 2's thing aside, and I'll come back to it after a while. It just makes no sense now because I've totally scrambled it because I got totally sidetracked by the clock. Roger Ebert of Siskel and Ebert, Roger Ebert, the film reviewer who writes for the Chicago Sun-Times, has an open letter to Bill O'Reilly. Apparently O'Reilly made some nasty remarks about the Chicago Sun-Times because they dropped his column. So Roger Ebert writes, Dear Bill, thanks for including the Chicago Sun-Times on your exclusive list of newspapers on your Hall of Shame. To be in an O'Reilly Hall of Fame would be a cruel blow to any newspaper. It would place us in the favor of a man who turns red and starts screaming when anyone disagrees with him. My grade school teacher, wise Sister Nathan, would have called in your parents and recommended counseling with Father Hogben. Yes, the Sun-Times is liberal, having recently endorsed our first Democrat for president since LBJ. We were founded by Marshall Field 1 week before Pearl Harbor to provide a liberal voice in Chicago to counter the Chicago Tribune, which opposed an American war against Hitler. I'm sure you would have sided with the Tribune at the time. I understand you believe one of the Sun-Times misdemeanors was dropping your syndicated column. My editor informs me that very few readers complained about the disappearance of your column, adding that many more complained about the disappearance of the comic strip Nancy. That was the famous Ernie Bushmiller comic in which Sluggo explained that wow was mom spelled upside down. Your column ran in our paper while it was owned by the right-wing polemicists Conrad Black and David Radler. We dropped it, your column, to save a little money after they looted the paper of millions. Now you call for an advertising boycott. It is unusual to observe a journalist cheering for a newspaper to fail. At present, the Sun-Times has no bank debt, but labors under the weight of millions of dollars in tax penalties incurred by Lord Black, who is serving an 8-year stretch for mail fraud and obstruction of justice. We also had to pay for his legal expenses. There's a major difference between Conrad Black and you. Lord Black is a much better writer and thinker and authored a respected biography about Roosevelt, who we were founded to defend. That newspapers continue to run your column is a mystery to me, since it is composed of knee-jerk frothings and ravings. If I were an editor searching for a conservative, I wouldn't choose a mad dog. My recommendation, the admirable Charles Krauthammer. Bill, I'm concerned that you have been losing touch with reality recently. Did you really say you are more powerful than any politician? That reminds me of the famous story about Squeaky the Chicago Mouse. It seems that Squeaky was floating on his back along the Chicago River one day. Approaching the Michigan Avenue lift bridge, he called out, "Raise the bridge! I have an erection!" O'Reilly is such a jerk. Oh, my God, he's such a jerk. Thanks to whoever sent that to me. Who sent it to me? I know one of you truth seekers sent that to me. Oh, well, I'll figure it out. Apparently, I'm having a hard time with the program tonight. And see, I can't just bag it and walk out. I used to be able to do that when we, when we were connected to a radio station or a network. And then, you know, we could just, you know, call the radio station and say, all right, you know, screw it. Put on a best of. Can't do that anymore. And by the way, let me get this said now. Tomorrow night, we are expecting violent, violent storms here in the metro Atlanta, North Georgia area. If you tune in your favorite radio station tomorrow for this program, or XM, or Sirius, or the internet, and there's nothing there, that will be a real heartbreaker for us, but it will mean that we have been totally rendered temporarily unable to connect to anything. When these storms hit here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, they don't mess around. I don't know how you back up the system that we have here, since we are totally dependent on phone lines and electricity. So just thought I would pass that on to you. All right, we'll be back after the break, and we will try Prairie 2's missive again, and let's see if I can do it right when we return. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 25 before the hour. Okay, let's try again from our economics correspondent, Prairie 2. Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of Chateau Lafite Rothschild, which is in keeping, I guess, with the lead story all over the news. Still, the pirates that are holding an American merchant ship captain hostage. Prairie 2 writes, the venture capitalists, if you ask a Republican, will tell you that this is a forward-thinking individual that provides capital for a risky new venture that holds great promise for society, a compassionate conservative funding the cure for a disease, for example. While they sometimes actually do this, the most new ventures in the past were things like the dot-com bubble. What they have been doing the past 8 years with current tax laws and total lack of regulation has become nothing less than pirates themselves, plundering and looting across the corporate seas. They take a relatively modest investment and match it with 10-to-1 financing, and then they go out and acquire controlling interest in a business. Then they sell off any marketable assets that that business has, and they borrow money against what they can't sell. Then they spin off the remaining shell with the entire debt load, including the original loan that they are now no longer responsible for, and take the entire profit as capital gains, which are then taxed at a maximum of 15%. The Republicans keep insisting that the capital gains tax rate should be reduced to zero to, quote, stimulate business, end quote. In the old days, when we were a prosperous nation, short-term capital gains were taxed at 66%. Now, you might think that a bank wouldn't want to loan money for this purpose, since the debt ends up attached to a company that will almost certainly fail in the long term. The trick to that is the loan gets shredded up and mixed with all sorts of other debt and sold as securities. It's even considered high-grade debt at the time because it's attached to a long-standing corporation with an excellent credit rating. Of course, now that's called a toxic asset. This simple, risk-free process has made a lot of rich Republicans into billionaires. In the old days, the pirates would have been hunted down by the Navy and hanged from the yardarm. Yes, the good old days. Go to prairie2.com and argue with him. Prairie2.com. I cannot believe this. I wouldn't have believed it except for the fact that one of our listeners, Dee in Dallas, sent me an email. Apparently, during the was it today's daily briefing, press briefing, one of the crack White House reporters asked Press Secretary Robert Gibbs if President Obama actually bowed to King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia when he met him. Yeah. And as Dee writes, is this honestly what our intelligent, hard-nosed media has come to? We expect this kind of posturing from politicians, but our media are supposed to be above this kind of nonsense. She writes, my thought is that the laser-beamed focus that's been placed on this non-issue is nothing more than one big male ego trip run amok, and it's being played out in the media. I love my man. Hell, I'm married to one. But you don't hear anyone but men trying to play up this punk mess, and it's sickening to have it played against the U.S. president. Obama bowed to Queen Elizabeth, and no one said anything. It looks like he may have bowed to King Abdullah, and he gets lambasted. If the tables were turned and Prince Philip of Great Britain were instead King Philip and Obama had bowed slightly when he met him, I really don't think there would have been this level of major outcry. Many would just view it, and correctly so, as some sort of royal protocol. Not unlike the president removing his shoes before he entered the Blue Mosque. It's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of respect. I honestly believe that this is only a big story because it just happened to be King Abdullah, a Muslim of Saudi Arabia. People, get over it already. It's this same kind of male ego tripping that gets us into domestic riots, overseas conflicts, and ill-advised wars. And the final question, of course, who cares? I had missed that story, and thank God, I'm glad I did not see one of the crack White House reporters asking Robert Gibbs if President Obama showed respect to a foreign king. Not that I agree with this. I believe in Denis Diderot's statement that man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. But since we're not there yet, Obama did the protocol proper thing. I'm sure that Sarah Palin, had she been vice president, would have said, "Hey, King, what's happening? You want me to show you how I kill turkeys?" Yeah. Have you ever watched this To Catch a Predator thing on MSNBC? Some nights after the program when they're running that, after this program, when they're running it on late night television, MSNBC, I watch this. They're talking about sexual predators, men who go online and strike up a web relationship, so they think, with a 13-year-old girl. In some instances, a boy, an underage child that they're going to have sex with. And after some pretty steamy and raunchy conversation that you just wouldn't think, or I wouldn't think, maybe some people would think, between an adult male and a child, the adult male finally makes a date. And this is part of the plot. He's going to come over to, or part of the sting, he's going to come over to this child's house when the parents are gone. Ostensibly for some sort of sex. And at that point, of course, he walks in and the actress who has plays a part of the young girl when the predator comes into her house, you know, she trills from the back room, "I'll be right there. Have a seat. I made some cookies." And, you know, the predator sort of looks around the kitchen. And at that point, the NBC correspondent walks in, and from that point on, that's when the story gets very interesting. To watch these people, these men, they've had everybody from truck drivers, military, retired. They had a rabbi, this poor rabbi. Oh my God, foreign exchange students. Most all of these people are married, and they think they're going to go have sex with a 13-year-old girl. So. After all of those TV shows, newspaper articles, and organizations that get these predators by having adults pretend to be underage girls in these internet chat rooms, as Mark Kearns reports from AVN Media Network, it's hard to believe that the stings will catch anybody. But last Friday, undercover officers caught a particularly big fish. His name is Juan Alberto Oval, whose job is to narrate a Spanish-language version of the Bible for the internationally known pro-censorship organization Focus on the Family. According to the affidavit of one of the investigators, Juan, allegedly using the screen name, entered an internet chat room on April 3rd and began an online conversation with someone he believed to be under the age of 15, and within minutes had marked the girl, actually an adult investigator, from the Jefferson County District Attorney's Office. This is out in Colorado Springs. He asked the girl whether she had had sex. And then he said, "Do you really like older guys, and would you like to meet me?" And the following morning, our young Mr. Juan allegedly IM'd the girl, told her he was home alone and horny. He asked if her mom were home, and when assured that she wasn't, he asked for the girl's address and phone number and said he was coming right over. He also apparently asked the teen what she liked to do during sex, and he told her, "I, blank, 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 and I also, blank, 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 blank." He went on to describe explicitly various sex acts. Well, according to the investigator's affidavit, the young man from Focus on the Family told the girl that he would be driving a green BMW and that when he later called from the car, he told her that he wanted to blank blank her and blankety blank blank and asked if she blankety blank 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 blank. Now, of course, the police were staking out the, quote, girl's, end quote, location. And when they saw a green BMW slowly pass the house, they tried to pull it over by flashing their emergency lights and sounding the siren. But young Mr. Juan from Focus on the Family continued on for at least one additional block before he finally stopped. Well, when they got him out and told him what was happening, he kind of went a little bit blank. And a spokesman for Focus on the Family, and a frequent contributor to the organization's website, told the Denver Post that he was shocked at the news of Mr. Juan's arrest, and that his group, Focus on the Family, is beginning its own process of looking into the allegations, and that it will work with the authorities. There's a little more here, so stick around.
How can I explain why mommy's not here anymore? 'Cause daddy likes porno and $10 whores. Daddy gets wasted and robs liquor stores. Daddy likes rubbing against little boys on the bus.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. There is a reason that I'm going through this the story about this guy, Juan Alberto Oval, who works for Focus on the Family and narrates a Spanish language version of the Bible for this organization. Just about everyone connected with Focus on the Family is a sexual pervert. By that I mean, to them, sex is something that is horrifying. It should never be indulged in unless it's man and woman. It should only be indulged in within the strictures of marriage. It is kind of nasty, kind of, you know, it's to make babies. If you have fun doing it, there's something a little bit wrong with you. So Gary Schneeberger, a spokesman for Focus on the Family and a frequent contributor to that organization's website, told the Denver Post that he was shocked at the news of Mr. Oval's arrest, and that his group is beginning, Focus on the Family is beginning its own process of looking into the allegations. Now, Focus on the Family's founder, James Dobson, who, if you remember, he recently resigned as that organization's leader. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? He continues his daily broadcast, though, with Christian-oriented advice, as opposed to what? Non-Christian-oriented advice? I don't know. Are Christians told, if you're thirsty, get a drink of water? Are non-Christians told, if you're thirsty, get a drink of dirt? You know, I don't get that. But anyway, the organization's website contains articles on various social issues, including homosexuality, same-sex marriage, gambling, and, quote, protecting your family. There is this passage from Focus on the Family's parenting section, specifically the article titled, "But Mom, You Were Spying." This is what it says. Teens create web profiles to express themselves. They want to understand their own identities, and they want to tell others who they are. That's a normal part of growing up. But in cyberspace, it can be dangerous. So tour your teen's personal page with her and point out where she's posted details, often unthinkingly, that might pinpoint her specific identity and location to someone with less than noble intentions, end quote. That's very good advice, isn't it? Who would have thought that one of Focus on the Family's own employees would probably read that and go, there's a plan in there someplace. Dobson goes on to say that, you know, the whole system breaks down if local law enforcement does not step in and stop this. And I'll just be curious, not that we'll ever know, but to see if Dobson's organization feels the same way about their employee. Well, had enough? We are coming to the serious part of the program after the break. Craig writes in something interesting about the Somali pirates. You know, they're in the news. Mike, I was just checking out your program from Wednesday. Heard you talking about the Somali pirates. I hear you that banditry is bad and you are against it and all that. I just think you need to take a second look at who the pirates are and why they're doing this. The short story is that these are fishermen that have had their seas depleted of fish from industrial fishing vessels. They've also been victims of countries dumping nuclear waste off their coast. All this while their country has been ravaged by war and food shortages. Since their government, which controls about three blocks in the capital, is powerless to stop the international fishing, industrial fishing ships from and dumping off the coast, it's left to the fishermen. It is the all-too-familiar story of capitalist countries taking advantage of poor, struggling people, taking their resources and dumping our waste on them. The fishermen, like a majority of the human population, can resist or die. They do not kill savagely and torture their hostages like the U.S. military and other protectors of freedom. Here's a link to an article by Johan Hari. If you have some evidence that tells a different story, please let me know. Thanks, Mike. I enjoy the program. And the article is just goes into greater depth about what Craig is talking about. I understand. I do. One of the reasons that Slumdog Millionaire was such an Academy Award-winning film this year was because it depicts, of course, there's the fantasy of winning the quiz game. But it depicts very clearly, as did the movie Children of or City of God. Was it City of God, the one about the slums in where was it in somewhere in South America, Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, I think, and all of these horrible places where children are born, where people live. Their entire lives cut short by the fact they're living on, you know, mounds of toxic waste. Yeah, that's all the result of capitalism. Every single bit of it. Every single bit of it. Maybe not capitalism in their country, But the side effects of capitalism, like when you're watching television, you see these commercials by the pharmaceutical companies and they have this wonderful new pill that will make your head stop hurting. At the same time, it may make your feet fall off, but, oh, you know, side effects. So the side effects of capitalism, especially the predatory type that we have been immersed in for the past century, the type of capitalism that the United States has foisted off on the rest of the world, that type of capitalism, and I don't think there's any other type, produces the kinds of situations that may bring about kids living on mountains of garbage or so-called pirates coming out from the coast of Somalia to try to find $1 million so they can buy lunch, right? Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. The Obama administration, we've been talking about this for a couple of days now, in its seeming or apparent efforts to continue some of the violations of the U.S. Constitution that were originally perpetrated by the Bush crime family is a bit unnerving. And now comes some information that Senate Republicans are privately threatening to derail the confirmation of a couple of key Obama administration nominees for top legal positions by linking their votes to the Obama administration suppressing these critical torture memos from the Bush crime family era. This, according to the Daily Beast, Scott Horton writing there says a reliable Justice Department source says that Senate Republicans are planning to, quote, go nuclear, end quote, over the nomination of Don Johnson as chief of the Office of Legal Counsel in the Department of Justice and Yale Law School Dean Howard Koh as State Department Legal Counsel if the torture documents are made public. Do-de-do-de-do. Really? This source says that these threats are the principal reason for the Obama administration's abrupt pullback last week from a commitment to release some of those documents. We talked about this. I think Michael Isikoff, writing at Newsweek, said that those documents were, what did he call them, when they were made public and read by the Obama Justice Department, quote, all hell broke loose, end quote, inside the Obama administration. That's according to Michael Isikoff in a Newsweek article last week. Here you go. The Republican Senate source confirms the strategy. It now appears that Republicans are seeking a definite commitment from Barack Obama that he will keep hidden the Bush crime family's deep, dark secrets about torture in exchange for letting these nominations go forward. This is coming from enough reliable sources that I definitely believe this. I believe this reportage. And since I do believe it, I will wait with abated breath now to see if the Barack Obama administration will tell these Republicans in Congress to kiss his rear end, and he will go ahead, release the torture memos, go ahead and forward with the nomination of these two people that the Republicans have threatened to refuse to confirm on the Senate floor, I guess. I'm not sure how all this madness works. Scott Horton says, Obama entered the presidency with a promise of transparency. One of his first acts was a presidential directive requiring, for example, that the Freedom of Information Act, that during the Bush years was practically worthless, that that act was to be enforced according to its terms, according to terms in the FOIA. You know, it was put there to avoid government secrecy. And there are certain rules and regulations and stipulations about how someone can use FOIA to get information. So Obama says, just allow it to function according to the terms in that that act. During the Bush years, the Department of Justice was told, stop it, no matter what it takes, don't allow people to get information. Now, Obama specifically criticized the Bush administration's practice of putting these secret memos together that determine legal policy and then hiding them from everybody. And if you remember, he promised to review and publish them after taking office. Well, as Scott Horton writes, in the last week, questions about Obama's commitment to transparency have mounted. On April 2nd, the Justice Department was expected to make public a set of four memoranda prepared by the Office of Legal Counsel, them again, long sought by the American Civil Liberties Union and other advocacy organizations in pending Freedom of Information Act litigation. The memos, authored by then administration officials and now University of California law professor John Yoo, federal appellate judge Jay Bybee, and former Justice Department lawyer Stephen Bradbury, apparently grant authority for the brutal treatment of prisoners, including waterboarding, isolated confinement in coffins, and head smacking. The stakes over release of the papers are increasingly high. You and Bybee are both targets of a criminal investigation in a Spanish court probing the torture of five Spanish citizens formerly held in Guantanamo. Also named in the Spanish case are former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and three other Bush lawyers. Legal observers, of course, in Spain, we mentioned this the other night, consider the Bush administration lawyers at serious risk of indictment, and the memos, once released, could be entered as evidence toward their prosecution. Now, apparently, unlike the torture memos that everybody already knows about, these memos directly approve specific torture techniques and therefore present a far graver problem for their authors. Now, what the Obama administration is being told by these Republicans is, we're not going to confirm your nominees if you release this. What would you do if you were Eric Holder or Barack Obama? Wouldn't you say to the Republicans saying that? Wouldn't you pull them over and say, psst, look here, you see this finger right next to my ring finger, the one that's between my ring finger and my index finger? You see that finger? You see it? You see it standing up straight while the rest of my fingers are in like a fist? Do you see that? Do you know what that means? Now get out of my face. I wonder if the Obama administration will do something equivalent to that. If you remember, Patrick Leahy was told to go have intercourse with himself by Dick Cheney one time when Cheney was walking across the Senate floor. Remember that? So if this half-dead monster Dick Cheney can use the F word on the floor of the Senate, which I guess is sacrosanct territory, you can say anything. You can talk about somebody's mama on the floor of the Senate and get away with it, right? Well, maybe Eric Holder ought to go down to the floor of the Senate and round up these people and say, look, let me tell you something. We are going to release these torture memos because we have an administration now, boys, that is trying for transparency. Even though it appears that on some of our court cases, we are arguing for the continuation of Bush crime family policies that destroyed the truth. But we have a method to that madness, which you will find out later. As for right now, boys, yeah, we're going to release these memos. You're not going to confirm our nominees? Well, why don't the Bush apologists remember that Obama could, if he wanted to, make recess appointments. These appointments don't need Senate confirmation. How many times did Bush do that? To appoint evil people, to appoint incompetent people, to appoint people that would further the Bush crime family's goals. So, would it not make sense for the Obama administration, in its attempt to get a couple of good people confirmed, that they could use very easily the same tactic, since they are, in effect, being blackmailed? Are they not? The Bush Obama administration is being told, if you release these torture memos, then we will retaliate. Is that, I mean, what do you call that, if not blackmail? Now, the release of the memos that the Senate Republicans want to suppress was cleared by Eric Holder and White House counsel Greg Craig. And then it was stopped when, like I mentioned, all hell broke loose inside the Obama administration. According to Michael Isikoff at Newsweek, Newsweek attributes internal opposition to disclosure of these torture memos to White House counterterrorism advisor and former CIA official John Brennan, who has raised arguments that exposure of the memoranda would run afoul of policies protecting the secrecy of agency techniques. And he also argues that the memos would embarrass countries like Morocco, Jordan, Pakistan, Tunisia, and Egypt, all of which have cooperated closely with the CIA in its extraordinary rendition programs. Now, why do you think suspects rounded up by the Bush crime family would have been sent to Morocco, Jordan, Pakistan, Tunisia, and Egypt? I'll give you a couple of minutes to consider your answer.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So to kind of recap, Republicans are threatening the Obama administration with blackmail. If the Obama administration, through the Justice Department, Eric Holder's Justice Department, releases these torture memos that detail how people were tortured, the way the torture methods were decided, and also reveals the involvement of some of these foreign governments, the Republicans are threatening not to confirm a couple of Justice Department nominees that Obama is sending up for confirmation. And, of course, the quick answer to that is just tell the Republicans to go screw themselves. I mean, okay, don't confirm them. I don't care. But we're going to get the truth out. Or are we? Now, again, this former CIA official and White House counterterrorism advisor named John Brennan says, no, we shouldn't release this stuff because it will embarrass the nations that took our renditioned prisoners and tortured them. I mean, let's be real here. Does anyone think that when we did extraordinary rendition to Tunisia, Egypt, Pakistan, Jordan, and Morocco, that we were sending people there for a day at the beach? No, we were sending them there to be tortured. And arguably, these countries would have provided torture techniques to a far greater degree of pain and agony and possibly death than our own torturers were capable of doing. After all, we sort of, are kind of relatively new to this process. Now, the argument against that, against Brennan's point, the argument is that the techniques that we used are now well known, as is the role of cooperating foreign intelligence services. So any references to these countries would certainly be redacted before the memoranda are released. And as Scott Horton writes, moreover, the argument that the confidence of those engaged in torture, serious criminal conduct under international domestic law, should be kept because they would be embarrassed if it were to come out, borders on the comic. It also borders on the insane. We are afraid that we will embarrass the government of Pakistan. And Jordan, I'm surprised the Queen, Queen Noor, isn't she an American? I wonder how Queen Noor would react. As far as Egypt is concerned, it is well known around the world that Mubarak, the president of Egypt, has no problem whatsoever torturing people, murdering them. Mubarak is like Saddam Hussein. There's no debate there. Tunisia. Who runs Tunisia? Some Bedouin who has no problem in gutting people who disagree with his point of view. As far as Morocco, there's a king there, I believe, right? Pakistan, don't even go there. So what we're engaged in here, you see, in order to cover up, official memoranda signed by God only knows who, if it was enough to throw the White House into a state of absolute shock when they saw these memoranda, who do you suppose has signed them? Whose names are there? Now, as Prairie 2 writes, if the Republicans carry out the threat to hold up these critical appointments, okay, Obama should hold a primetime press conference and read the juiciest parts of the torture memos out loud and then name names of the senators who are trying to keep all this a secret. That should open up some seats for Democrats in next year's election, right? That would be the secondary effect. The primary effect might be to allow Americans to see. I mean, there are Americans who know this already. The torturers, the policymakers, members of the Bush crime family, now members of the Obama administration. These are Americans. They understand what we did. Why are you and I kept from understanding to the fullest extent what we are paying for with our money? You know, it costs money to buy, Iron Maidens and racks. And, you know, you got to buy those plastic jugs to pour water down people's throats. And let's not forget ropes and chains and those hoods. I realize we probably get them all from China, but we still buy them. You see, you and I. And we still live here. And we still have citizenship in this country. So the Obama administration insiders, the Bush crime family perpetrators, members of Congress, international torturers and kings and presidents are all aware, but you and I are not. Do you want to keep it that way? We'll be right back. And I say anything you can do, I can do it better. I'm the toughest. And I can do what you can do. You never try to do what I do. I'm the toughest. I'm the toughest. I'm the toughest. I'm the toughest. Cause anything you can do, I can do better. I'm the toughest. You can do, I can do better. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. It is 25 before the hour. You know, even as we speak, I get this email from Sheila. that the CIA is going to close down the secret prisons. This is according to, who's reporting this? This is from Al Jazeera, and it's dated tomorrow. Tomorrow, April 10th. CIA is to close down its global network of secret prisons where so-called war on terror suspects were subjected to harsh interrogation techniques. That's according to Leon Panetta, the agency's new director, right? Panetta said in a letter to CIA employees today that private contractors would no longer be allowed to interrogate prisoners held by the CIA. Panetta was quoted as saying in the letter, quoted by the Reuters news agency, quote, CIA no longer operates detention facilities or black sites and has proposed a plan to decommission the remaining sites. Panetta also said that the CIA had told the U.S. Congress that it had captured no new prisoners since he became director in February. Gee, I wonder why. Panetta said, quote, I've directed our agency personnel to take charge of the decommissioning process and have further directed that the contracts for site security be promptly terminated, end quote. Well, what do you know? Panetta said the CIA would continue to question suspects, but that it would use, quote, a dialogue style of questioning that is fully consistent with the interrogation approaches authorized and listed in the Army Field Manual, which, of course, bans harsh techniques. Panetta went on, quote, CIA officers do not tolerate and will continue to promptly report any inappropriate behavior or allegations of abuse. That holds true whether a suspect is in the custody of an American partner or a foreign liaison service. No CIA contractors will conduct interrogations. End quote. Panetta also said if more prisoners were detained, they would be interrogated by agency employees and handed over quickly to their home country or a country with a legal claim on them. Sheila sent me the story, but apparently also it was on TVNewsLies.org this morning. Boy, I missed going there today. I was just too busy, and apparently so was our good friend Sheila. But you can go to TVNewsLies.org and get the story. So even as we are discussing this, these torture memos, apparently this part of the Bush crime family legacy is going to be ended. Wouldn't that be nice? Now, what to do about the attempted blackmail by these Republicans? Well, I agree with what Prairie 2 said. Just Obama ought to hold a press conference. And before he does that, you know, just say to these senators, you know, you keep pushing on me. I'm going to get so up in your face and your life that you will have to go back to selling cars, which, you know, I'm sure you did before you became a United States senator. Oh, by the way, we're taking phone calls now. If you want to jump in here, it's 877-99-MALLOY. And after he tells the senators that, then he should go ahead and schedule the press conference and have the torture memos in front of him and just see what kind of reaction he gets from the senators. You know, two can play that game. Now, frankly, I think he ought to then go ahead and just hold the press conference and say, here are the memos. Let me read to you what the United States of America was authorized to do, authorized private contractors and CIA people to do to people that we bought from bounty hunters in Afghanistan or Pakistan or Iran or China or wherever we bought them from. So that Dick Cheney and George Bush and the rest of these bastards could play international bandit capture or whatever the hell game they were playing. Hero of the American war against terror. Let me read to you, Barack Obama ought to say, the kinds of interrogation techniques and tortures devised by Condoleezza Rice, by John Yoo, by David Addington, George Bush, Dick Cheney, and go right down the list. And then, after he reads the torture memos, redacting, of course, those parts that might cause embarrassment to the countries who are our co-conspirators in this these human rights abuses. Then he can name the senators who were threatening to withhold or to stop the nomination of nominees by the Obama administration to the Justice Department. That's what should happen. Don't you think? Don't you agree? But you also know it won't happen. It won't happen at all. Do you know what will happen? Here's what will happen. The Obama administration will quietly withdraw the names, or they'll cut a deal with these filthy, disgusting, goddamn Republicans, because that's what Democrats do. Then why did you vote for one, Mike? Right. That's a good question. You all know the answer to that. Oh, my God. It's just. It is surreal, in addition to being unreal, to think where we have been living for the past, just the past 8 years. I mean, we can go back over the last century if you want to, if you've got the stomach for it, but just the past 8 years where we've been living. I mean, let's face it, the Bush crime family only enhanced what has been American policy since the turn of the 19th century, 20th century. Right? They just put a fine point on it. Kathy in Green Bay writes, do you believe that the CIA will follow the directives of Panetta, Obama, or anyone else? I'm not sure they will, Kathy writes. I sort of think of them as a rogue organization. P.S. I agree with you regarding Obama press conference on the blackmail. If he calls her bluff, what the hell are they going to do? Admit that they're blackmailing him? Or deny it? Thanks, Kathy. All right, we have let's do some phone calls here. Bob is calling from Queens, New York, listening on XM. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Michael. I love your show, and I listen to you as often as I can.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Great. I have a question for you, Mike. Do you honestly believe that the President of the United States actually runs the country?
No. Never have.
Have you ever heard of an organization called the Bilderberg Group?
Well, yeah, I understand about that, and the Club of Rome, and you know, there's several organizations, but and they may be very malevolent, populated by pod people who determine the fate of the other 7 billion of us, but I just don't think so. I don't give these shadowy organizations that much credit, Bob. I just don't. I can't. I may be crazier in hell, but well, I just can't do it.
Well, now that Obama's president and he seems to be following the Bush policies somewhat, and I've come to my own conclusion that I think that basically he's just being controlled and he's being told what to do. And I've really lost faith in a lot of government. I voted for Obama as well, and I've lost faith in our government, and I think that he's just being controlled and someone's telling him what to do now.
Well, in certain aspects, you're right, and I agree that the appearance of that is out there for everyone to see, especially where it concerns the continuation of the death of the Fourth Amendment. For some reason, Obama is insistent on resisting these lawsuits that against AT&T, against the government for, or not the government because of, you know, sovereign immunity, but these lawsuits, I, you know, to immunize the telecoms, I don't quite get this. And I agree with you. It appears that Barack Obama is doing that in a couple of instances, but in so many other areas, is he not, upending some of the more vicious, egregious policies of the Bush crime family? Isn't he?
Yes, he has, and I'm impressed with some of the things that he's done, but I still think that deep down he's being controlled and he's being told
well,
what to do.
Do you think that it might be fair to say the jury's still out? Let's give him a little more time.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see what happens.
I would give him more time. I'm still open-minded. I'm a very open-minded person, and that's why I listen to your show, because I think you're a great guy, and I like to listen to what you have to say as well.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. But don't forget, very little of what you hear on this program is original. You know, it's a campfire where, you know, you put your input in, and I spend the better part of the day gathering input from other people. But I hear what you're saying. Bob, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We got a break here. I have the same questions. You know, you'll listen to this program one night and it sounds like I'm all over him, like white on rice, so to speak. And other nights where I'm saying, you know, let's give him more time. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Fred in Maryland writes in regarding all this. It's simple. In Congress, the Democrats are now in charge, but the Republicans are still in control. Yeah, isn't that the truth? Dan, excuse me, Dan is calling from Cleveland, listening on Sirius. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
You know, doing all right. Mike, listen, I love listening to your show.
Well, thanks.
I love the way you take it a little bit further than a lot of the other left-leaning
yeah, that's true.
Out there.
That's very true.
I really believe that. But, Mike, listen, in my opinion, has anything changed with Obama being elected? I mean, is he really just bowing to the true people that are in charge in this country?
I think some fundamental things have changed. Let me give you the first one. The regulatory agencies that are necessary in running a democratic republic, those regulatory agencies are once again being staffed with people who are there to do a job, not people who are there as political operatives, as in the Bush crime family and in the old Soviet Union system. So that's a fundamental difference. Now, a quick retort to that is, what about the financial services industry? He's not putting people in there who can recognize that this country has been scammed by the banks, by the financial services industry, and they should be allowed to fail. My only answer to that is, I would like to see it fail. I don't know if that's cheap talk on my part, because if the system comes down all at once, we're all screwed. You do understand that?
Well, Mike, of course I understand it, but the problem is, under the Bush family, these institutions were allowed to get big enough to the point where if they fail, they were allowed to get too big, to the point where they were too big to fail. And that's the problem. No company should be too big, that big.
Well, all right, that's
where if they fail, it takes down the whole world.
Okay,
economy.
All right.
That's my first point.
Okay, well, that's another thing that I think the Obama administration is trying to do, is to, in putting regulations in place or starting to enforce the regulations that have been there but were not enforced. I think he's trying to make sure, or his administration is trying to make sure, that that doesn't happen, that no longer do institutions in the financial services industry rise up that are too big to fail. So, you know, I mean, that appears to be what he's doing.
Well, I really hope you're correct on that.
And the other thing, he's changing.
This Geithner, he's the same as this Geithner. He's the same one who wrote the all. Who was in bed with AIG before Obama even got elected?
Well, I'm not saying that some of the appointees that he's put in here to help with that particular situation are the type that what's his name? Who's the columnist for the New York Times? Not Stiglitz, but I would include him. Paul. Krugman and Stiglitz, I'm sure if they were handling this, they would be doing it a different way. Obama has picked people like Geithner who, I have my questions about. But, you know, you and I are out here. We don't really know. What we see is what mainstream press wants us to see. What we hear is what mainstream media wants us to hear. I don't know what the hell is going on in there. Maybe a radical approach to this situation that I would advocate would bring the kind of destruction that would take a couple of generations for us to recover from. I don't know anymore.
I 100% agree with you. And just one other point I have, too, there's this Robert Gates who has roots that are anyone who looks into his past, it's a pretty scary past. But beyond that, he's bound to the military-industrial complex, I think. I mean, I've been in the military. My two brothers are in Iraq right now. And I tell you what, I don't see anything changing right now.
What about Gates ordering the canceling of, just one example, the F-22s that were designed to fight the Soviet Union, which doesn't exist anymore? That's going to affect people right down here in Georgia at Dobbins, at Lockheed. What about that? I mean, Gates is doing that.
But what about Iraq? I mean, come on. Obama's rhetoric, the same rhetoric that a Bush said when Iraqis are ready to take over, and sending more troops.
Well, that's now wait.
Afghanistan is a cluster. You know what?
I don't think you're being real fair on that one. Obama was just there, and the rhetoric that I heard from him was pretty definite. I mean, he's already set out a timetable when we're going to be out of there. Which nobody in the Bush administration did, or nobody in the Bush administration's military would do. Obama has done that. Obama also has made it very clear that the Iraqis must take over. There was a lot of that kind of, cheap talk that came from, George W. Bush, but I don't think there was ever any force behind it or any substance behind it. I don't know. Dan, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Again, a lot of questions, very few answers. We have had a shredding of this economy and our reputation and our civil liberties since the advent of Ronald Reagan. That's 1980. This is 2009. It's 29 years of destruction. Obama comes in and I and you right in the front of the howling pack saying, you know, change things, change things, change things. But if it took 29 years to do this to us, and I'm talking about, you know, the modern destruction, I realize it's a lot longer than that. But ever since Reagan, then, you know, maybe we should give Obama a little more time. This is what I struggle with. I voted for him. I would vote for him today. But do I like all of his policies? Do I agree with what he's doing on every issue? No, hell no. Of course not. And that's what we talk about on this program. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. All right, before we go back to your calls here, a couple of quick emails regarding this, the situation with Obama. Kathy writes, giving him more time on things that take time, like turning the economy around, ending the war, upgrading our school system, etc. No one expects that that can happen overnight, but let's not give him a lot of time to take principled stands. Releasing the torture memos doesn't take time. It takes a backbone. And perhaps a little planning so that one can do the most damage to the Republicans and gain as much political capital as possible in the process. That's from Kathy in Green Bay. Daryl in Las Vegas, excuse me, Daryl writes in, Mike, I heard your show last night when I heard the caller named Malia from Wisconsin call in about holding President Obama accountable. Let me digress for a second. Yeah, she was upset because, you know, I was making the comments essentially like what I'm making tonight. Anyway, back to Daryl. Daryl writes, I'm an African-American male who supported Obama by donating money and time to his campaign. I was also proud when he won the presidency and even shed a tear or two during his inauguration. Some of President Obama's policies concern me, especially his decision for expanding the war in Afghanistan. I'm also disappointed with his decision on wiretapping. I think you put Malia in her place last night, and she needs to do a gut check and see some of the similarities between President Obama and George Bush. I believe Malia could be going through what I went through after he won the presidency. Excuse me?
I just want to get the lady's name right.
Well, what is it?
Nolia.
Nolia? Okay. I believe Nolia could be going through what I went through after he won the presidency. The right never criticized Bush. They went with everything he said and did, and he was never held accountable with right-wingers. Yet with Democrats, we hold our own accountable. That used to bother me as well for about 2 months because he was not even in office yet, and he was being criticized by his own, referring to Obama. Now, after I did my gut check, I have realized that he does need to be held accountable and criticized when his ideas do not parallel with the left. I also had to understand that right-wingers are never going to sacrifice their own, even when they know it is wrong because their talking points don't allow them to do so. In other words, they don't have a brain and can't think for themselves. So we on the left should continue doing what we know is right, and that's representing the left. For Nolia, it may take time because she wants to believe, like I do, that a change has come. I'll continue giving him credit where it's deserved, and I'll continue holding him accountable where he lacks our ideology. Daryl in Las Vegas. Yeah, which is a long way, which is why I read it, of saying exactly what Kathy in Green Bay said. Daryl in Las Vegas says the same thing. He has to be held accountable. I don't know what happens to people when they are elected president. There must be something that happens inside their minds. I think this is one of the reasons I probably at this point am counting more, and don't ask me why, on Michelle Obama to apply the right kind of pressure, is that the right word, to her husband, who happens to be the president, than I would expect from his closest advisors. She is his wife. She knows him better than anyone on earth. I also get the feeling that Michelle Obama is extremely grounded. I'm not saying that Obama is not, but what happens when you get the presidency? Do you not, to some degree, start taking off in these flights of, if not fancy, flights of, how do you handle it? All of a sudden, you are literally the one man on earth with the most power at your control. That's you. You are at the pinnacle, the peak. I don't know how a normal human being can deal with that. Now, Bush, George, the last one, being a punk and a dry drunk like he was, he handled it by acting like he was the just elected head of his fraternity. Back in college, that's exactly the way he handled the presidency. Clinton, I get the feeling, sometimes handled it like he was a professor who was always looking for that co-ed in the front row who, when she crossed her legs, her skirt rode up a little bit. George Herbert Walker Bush I don't know what the hell he was. He was just a blundering fool, and Reagan was an actor. So, I mean, how far back you want to go? So, Obama, who is, I mean, this guy really has the potential, doesn't he? He, first of all, he's young. He's the youngest president we've had since who? Kennedy? He's young. He's extremely intelligent. He's a great speaker, great writer, has this ability to disarm people with a smile, that smile of his, or the way he will reach out and touch someone. You've seen it. He doesn't come up behind Angela Merkel and grab her shoulders and, you know, think about, hey, baby. You know, that's not what he's about. That's what Bush was about. Obama has a way of gripping somebody's hand or putting an arm around their shoulders that is comforting, as well as an indication of strength. And I don't think anyone ever thought George Bush had strength. They knew he had power, but he didn't have any strength. None. Period. Zero. Zip. Empty bucket. Obama's got strength, but his wife seems to be the one who will ground this man. I just cannot see, and I'm going way off in left field here, I understand, but I cannot see Michelle Obama, what do I want to say here? Putting up with nonsense, if you understand what I mean by that. And if you're not married, you probably don't. But if you're a married person, any married person, black, white, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, doesn't matter. If you are an African-American married, then I think you know even more and a more gut level what I'm talking about. Okay? So that's what I'm hoping for. I really am. Almost every time I heard the man speak over a six-month period, I got tears in my eyes because, you know, maybe it was only because of a sense of relief. Oh, my God, we have an articulate human being here, not a jerk, jackass, drug-addled, dry, drunk freakoid. We have a scholar, a professor, a leader, on and on and on. So, okay, now that he's president, now what? Now what? You know, Daryl talks about doing a gut check. I'm constantly doing a gut check. Like, first of all, the first gut check, did you vote the right way? Well, there's no question. I would have voted for a snake before I would have voted for, McCain and the hole from Wasilla. But, you know, that gut check, did you vote the right way? To what degree were you conned, Malloy? And were you conned because, you know, you poked your own eyes out? There was enough to see there. Did you see it? Did you just want change so bad that you went along with the rhetoric of the story? And I keep coming back with answers that, no, I wasn't conned. I mean, even during the primaries, we were going after on this program his voting record and some of his associations, the University of Chicago, the corporate association. Sure, sure. But if you remember, one of the things we all talked about on the liberal left was, okay, let's put him in office. And just like Roosevelt was no reformer. Roosevelt was no liberal savior. When he got in there, though, the pressure on him from liberal left groups was so great that he started to respond. And as a result, we came up with the New Deal. I realize he talked about that during the primaries, but everybody talks during a primary. So maybe with Obama, that talk about pressure, you know, and something else somebody said to me, and this is a real racial statement, not racist, a real racial statement. I had a couple of black folks who listened to this program email me, totally independent of each other. I think one came from LA and I think the other one came from Ohio, but both emails said essentially the same thing. You know what it said? I think I may have read one on the air. Essentially what the email said was, hey, Mike, don't worry about it. We, meaning the black community, we will keep him straight. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're looking for you. We're looking at each other and we don't
Outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Haven't found that outrage yet, huh? 21 past the hour. Back to your calls. Liz is calling from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Liz.
Hi there.
Welcome to the program.
Well, hi. I have three quick points. First of all, yes, I think the left owes it to ourselves, the country, and Obama to help curb any grandiosity that he might feel after, you know, suddenly making his way at this young age to the highest, you know, where he is. But the other thing, insofar as, I mean, I too, I'm nervous about Geithner, Summers, the banking bailout, on and on and on, and the torture memos and all that. But I look at the torture stuff and I say, okay, as important as that is in terms of, you know, our national honor and maintaining our principles, when you're facing what this man is facing and what our nation is facing in terms of foreign policy challenges and economic challenges and stuff like that, this is the torture stuff. I hate to say it, I may be misunderstood, is small change for right now. And the World Court, the Pinochet judge, you know, in Spain, things like that. These people, I think the rest of the world for right now is eventually moving towards making sure that Cheney, Rumsfeld, all the Bush are eventually going to be, there are going to be warrants for their arrest to drag them in front of the Hague as war criminals.
Okay, if I may interrupt, I'm kind of hung up on what you said about torture, the torture issue.
Isn't
the torture issue, it goes to the very heart of what this country is.
But the thing is, I think he's doing triage right now, and he needs a certain number of, one of the things that's going to happen. Okay, you go.
Let me just ask you, and then you can go on. Okay, triage. Where we're bleeding to death is the fact that the Bush crime family stole our soul. How difficult is it for Barack Obama, and who would be affected, for Barack Obama to say, A, we don't torture anymore, which he's already said, B, we're dismantling all the torture camps, which apparently has been said today, and C, I'm going to release every single bit of information that I have access to that was about torture and violation of not just our Constitution, but international law, so that the American people can see what happened. And then he can get on with the business of being the president.
I hear you. I hear you. And the thing is, yes, he has done some of these things. He hasn't done some of the others.
I don't see how tackling this torture issue head on, whatever that means, how that can be considered a trivial issue, Liz.
I don't think it's trivial. I'm not saying it's trivial. I'm thinking it can wait. The thing is, we've got other things. He's got a certain amount of political capital, a certain amount of time, and I think he needs to maximize it on trying to get us economically back in the right direction, or we are effing sunk in so many different ways that reclaiming the American ideal, you know, the don't torture and all that kind of stuff, I think the only place that Cheney and those are going to be eventually going to be able to go is Dubai. Have a nice vacation.
But don't you agree with this though? If the torture issue and the destruction of whatever soul this country had by the Bush crime family, if that is not addressed, or let me change it, if that is addressed right up front with all the information put out there, then don't you think that the American people, the ones that still make sense, would absolutely demand that the people who had so corrupted our country, they corrupted everything. It wasn't just the fact that they corrupted the soul of the country. They also corrupted our banks. They corrupted our environment. But why? I mean, why?
Everybody knows it already. It's everybody knows it. Everybody
But knows it, who will admit it? Everybody knows.
But if you have the evidence out there, if you have the memos out there, if you reveal everything, then the Republicans who are saying, if you let the truth out, we're not going to confirm your appointees, then the American public will understand how vile this whole game got.
No, they won't.
Well,
they already know it.
No,
they
don't.
What they will do instead is they will blame the gridlock. Potentially, they will blame whatever gridlock happens on the Democrats because the Democrats
well,
can't get
to
their
me,
agenda through.
To me, and Liz, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. Both of us are pretty passionate on this idea. Thanks, Liz. I will respectfully disagree with you. Let me put it this way. First of all, I disagree that the American public knows what happens. Denial is not just a river in Egypt. Nobody, beyond people who are saturated with this information, and that's not very many of us, is willing to accept this. That's why the Republicans are keeping it suppressed. If everyone knew about it, then why would the Republicans try to keep these memos suppressed? It has to come out. It has to. If it destroys the Democratic Party, you know what? I don't care. I do not want to live in a country that is based on the kind of values, if that's what you want to call them, that says torture is a practice that is allowable.
Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Excuse me. Back to your phone calls here. John is calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas, listening on XM. Hey, John.
Hi, I'm kind of a fan of Lou Huddleston,
if you talk
to him on occasion.
Uh-huh.
I suffer somewhat the same frustration you do. I was a Kucinich supporter also.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back in Arkansas in retirement. I found during the election almost nobody even knew who Kucinich was because the corporate media was so effective at weeding him and other threats to corporate power out of the system, out of the election so early on that nobody here even knew who he was.
Yeah, for sure.
But we have two fine Republican senators in Lincoln and Pryor. And the reason I tend to think of them as Republicans, I think a Democratic senator to me is what Bernie Sanders. He represents the ideal as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But Lincoln is part of the old South, the plantation South.
Well, just so let me interrupt, just so people understand, Pryor and Lincoln are Democrats, but what you're saying is they vote like Republicans.
Exactly.
Right. I just want the people in the rest of the country who might not know that. Go ahead. I'm sorry, John.
Well, anyhow, Blanche Lincoln's husband is, they make a lot of their money from the medical profession,
mm-hmm.
business, status quo. So she will resist any efforts toward changing the medical system. She and Pryor both were on a mailer that came to the House the other day, a very expensive mailer that was advocating the lie that the employee free choice thing will take away your secret ballot.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not. A very expensive mailer. And
since you live there, maybe a phone call to their office, maybe they don't know that the Wall Street Journal came out like 10 days ago editorially and finally admitted that they have been lying for the past 3 or 4 years about that Employee Free Choice Act, that it does include secret ballots. Oh, my God, I can't believe Pryor and Lincoln both signed off on that, huh?
Both signed off of it. Their pictures are big as life on there, and they even have a mailer on it to mail in and say, please
God.
Vote for this thing. And there was a meeting.
Wait a minute. Vote for the Employee Free Choice Act or vote against it?
Defeat it.
Oh, defeat it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Now, there was a meeting at Bentonville earlier, let's see, it was, I think, earlier this week, of 300 business leaders called together in Bentonville to organize to fight this in Arkansas.
And also, if people don't know, that's the home of Walmart.
Exactly. Now, what's really interesting to me is not only is Lincoln going to take a stand against any changes in the medical system, but she is totally free trader, buys into the whole Milton Friedman thing, as does Pryor, the free trade thing. And the interesting part about Lincoln in particular, and the reason I say she's part of the Old South, she's from like the Stuttgart Dumas area of Arkansas, which is the old plantation area. There are 900 rice farmers down there who have the biggest scam going, I think, or at least I think of it as a scam. They use far more than they're using up the Oglala water reservoir.
Yeah, I've read about that. I think in the New York Times within the past 3 or 4 months. Yeah.
Well, there are only 900 of them. They're subsidized to the tune of about $60 million a year. They're using up the water, and they're going to divert an entire river at the cost of almost $1 billion to service these 900 guys. And I've written to Lincoln and said, look, there are only 900 of them. You guys don't bat an eyelash at laying off 10,000 auto workers. Why don't you tell these rice guys to go someplace where there's water and grow their rice?
I've got to move on. Let me make sure I got the point, John. The point is that you are sick of Democrats who are really Democrats in name only.
Exactly. And I don't know what to do about it because our papers here are all just corporatist propaganda outlet.
Well, there may not be too much any of us can do about it any longer. It may be that in that long period of time from the ascension of Ronald Reagan over the past 29 years that it's been totally any differences between the Democrats and Republicans have been totally neutralized except for this kind of pissy schoolyard infighting that the Republicans seem to love to get into. Republican members of Congress always remind me of people on the playground. Well, you can't climb on the monkey bars because I want to climb on them. You know, that kind.
Yes.
They're completely childish. I'm not sure what the answer might be, but I sure hear you. A lot of people will say, well, it's time to, stop screwing around with Democrats who are dinos, Democrats in name only, and get some real Democrats. That may be the way to go. I don't know if we have enough time to do it, though. John, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We let this happen by Republicans. Republicans allowed our party to be taken over by people who are no more Democrat or subscribe to the principles of the Democratic Party than the man on the moon, in much the same way that Republicans 25, 30 years ago allowed their party to become corrupted with religious fanatics and liars and cheats and sneaks to the point where their party, the Republican Party now, is run by people like Rush Limbaugh, John Boehner, Joe the Plumber, and Sarah Palin. It's astonishing what happened. And this was part of a long-running Republican plan to sleaze up the election process, to make it so filthy, so disgusting with the targeted negative advertising. And it was Republicans who started this. I'm talking about in the modern era. It was scummy back in the first elections in the 1700s in this country. But I'm talking about in the modern era. They decided to make it so vile that it would turn people off. And it was effective. People just stopped voting. They said to hell with it. Especially in local elections. Every time you have a local election and 18% of the electorate turns out and the head of the election board says, oh man, we had a great turnout. And then it goes to a runoff and 3% turnout. You know, it's that sort of thing. Politics, like nature, abhors a vacuum. And the Republicans created the vacuum. Most of us, by most of us leaving, saying to hell with it. I don't like the system anymore. It sucks. It stinks. I hate it. And we walked away and they walked in. The religious right maniacs, these Christian freaks, the corporatists, and I think at some point conservative Democrats, the so-called Reagan Democrats, started to realize if they wanted to play in the big sandbox, they were going to have to be like the Republicans. And that's where we are. And God knows, John, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I really do. You know what to do about it. Jim is calling from Poplar Bluff, Missouri, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Mike. It's an honor to speak to you.
My pleasure.
I find you, this is my first time calling, I find your views appropriately over the top.
Yeah?
I'm a recovering conservative.
Uh-huh.
Over the past 15 years, I've finally seen the light, and I was wanting to get your opinion on this issue of Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, which seems to be, or to me, I read it about 12 years ago, and it is like the conservative Bible. It is to the conservative party what Mein Kampf is to Nazis. I mean,
and that's a good analogy. Ayn Rand wrote about Superman. The contemptible, disgusting masses, always clawing, trying to, bring people down to their level, the refusal of society to recognize true genius when they see it, the individuation of the country rather than bringing us together. Ayn Rand was the type of writer, that said, no, you know, it's the same thing as the Übermensch in German mythology, you know, the Superman. And look where it's gotten us. Ayn Rand was a nutcase. And what's his name? Our most recent secretary of the head of the Fed, Greenspan, was a great Ayn Rand fan, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And, you know, it all goes back to the individualism and profit motivation at all costs. I mean, it's the explanation for the type A personality that the conservatives are. And if anybody really wants to understand the enemy, I mean, this right wing, what do you call it, the wing nuts.
Yeah.
To actually, if you can stomach it, read the book. And it does explain, and it's painfully clear to me now how wrong it is.
Mm.
You know, I just wanted to comment on that and hear what your views were on it.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate what you had to say, Jim. I know a lot of people who read The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged and essays of Ayn Rand's who bought into it. And to think that philosophy, that attitude is somehow applicable here at the start of the 21st century with 8 billion people on the planet clawing and fighting, and it's going to get worse, for what few resources left are left. It's insane. Ayn Rand now reads like a maniac. The writings of someone who is absolutely, as well as her characters, totally insane.
Every person, every being, your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot. I am a patriot.
Ten before the hour, thanks to the usual gang, Kathy Bay, who engineered and produced the program, Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, the economic correspondent for this program, and Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, the ethical advisors. We still have time to take some calls, I believe. Yes, we do. Ben is calling from Buena Park, California, listening online. Hey, Ben.
Hey there. Mike?
Yes.
You know, so change is not happening fast enough for you. You see, now look, I say that, so now after millennia of evolution that it took us to be where we can consider things consciously. Now you're perturbed that Obama is not doing things fast enough?
No, no, you've got it asked backwards. I said just the opposite. I said that we are expecting him to do things too fast, and to do so is irrational. You're not listening with the right set of ears, or I have not made it clear that my position is that there are a couple of things I wish he would do yesterday that don't require great big acts of the presidential power. All they require is a statement saying, no more torture, here are the memos.
Now, can I ask something?
Sure.
Okay.
Just don't because start. Said, don't start from an ass backwards premise on this program. You can do that on right wing programs, but don't do it here.
Okay.
All right.
And by the way, I try to make these points on a right wing program, and I don't even get this far.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. But go ahead.
You just said you would wish that he would ask these things yesterday.
Yeah, like stopping torture.
Now, Mike, what did I just say? After a millennia of years of evolution, we finally got to this place, and now you want him to do things, what, yesterday? Look, we didn't get here yesterday. We got here after a millennia of evolution.
Yeah, but he became president yesterday. Now, what's your point?
My point is that, look, we are still evolving, Mike. And if you could understand that, then as one knuckle dragger to another knuckle dragger, I would say, need to stand up.
What do you mean we're evolving? Do you mean we're evolving in a spiritual way, in a physical way? We're still not. Oops! Wait a second. What happened there? Oh my goodness! Wait a minute. Let me see if I can get him back. Are you still there, Ben?
Yes.
Okay. We're evolving. How?
D. All of the above. Look, these are things. This is what I see is so beautiful. Is that look? While people are saying,
hey,
that,
where is Buena Park, California?
It's right across the street. Where I live is right across the street from Knott's Berry Farm. I can see the accelerator from where I'm at.
That explains part of my confusion here.
Oh, what you were confused about where Buena Park is?
No, I'm trying to figure out what you mean by you've said it three times tonight. Millennia of evolution. What in the hell are you talking about?
Well, you know, I was trying to frame that because what I really meant was a millennium of years of evolution. But it seems like, you know, my syntax isn't quite right there because I'm not evolved yet. You know what I mean?
Okay, I tell you what, I have a suggestion, Ben. I really do. Apparently, you know, you're on 33 and a third and the rest of the world is on 78 or something. Call me back when you have evolved, all right? Just call me back after you have gone through the evolving process, because I don't know what you're talking about. I really don't, and I'm trying. I spent a little under two minutes to try to understand what you're saying, and I can't get it, and I'm a fairly simple human being. I like sentences that have, subject, verb, and object. It just, I don't know, it has to do with my fourth grade English teacher, I guess. So, Knott's Berry Farm. I spent a month there one afternoon. Oh, Lord. Okay, Dave is calling, listening on Sirius. He's somewhere in Florida. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I love your program.
Well, thanks.
I hope I'm not wasting your valuable airtime.
No.
Something I feel that needs to be addressed is of the media being so dominated by right-wing garbage.
Yeah.
You being in the media as long as you have maybe could shed some light on it. How does it work? How can we promote more of the truth, more of the left-wing media?
Well, the only way I can think of, let me answer you on the air here, Dave. The media is right-wing because this is a corporatist society. This is a capitalist society. It's all about profit. And profit means narrowing, it's not broadcasting any longer, it's narrowcasting. Narrowing the message down so you don't confuse the listener or the reader or the viewer. If you have too many points of view out there, the viewer gets all fluttery and doesn't know whether or not he or she wants to buy the product that's being, you know, the ShamWow or whatever the hell is being advertised. Corporate America is by its, I mean, definitively, by definition, it is a conservative enterprise. It hates any kind of dissent. It hates people of color. It hates people who are gay. It hates women who want their own privacy. It is linked deeply to Judeo-Christian insanity. Mostly Christian, in this particular case. You know, the ones who link Christianity and capitalism are my favorites. Boy, I love those people. I'll tell you how to get more of a diversity of voice. Sign up for my podcasts. That's how you do it. Go to MikeMalloy.com as soon as you get to the next truck stop and, you know, get online and sign up. I know you probably already have, Dave. Thanks, Dave. We got to go, man. You asked a good question. I just, I've tried to answer that question in the past, and here we are, completely cut loose from any corporate moorings. So support the program, will you? Not just Dave, but a couple thousand more people. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.